Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk here on November 27th. It's almost December, It's actually going to snow today some. Oh, and we are into a couple of weeks worth of hunting and things like that. We are here live, and today is the day of the big game. And, of course, you know what I'm talking about, the Purdue-Indiana game. That's the big game in my eyes, okay? But I think there's something else going on because there's a lot of traffic out there when I came into the studio. What's going on today, Derek?
The Michigan Wolverines and the Ohio State Buckeyes are meeting here at the Big House in Ann Arbor in front of about 110,000 screaming fans in what should be a very exciting game. Hopefully, Michigan can finally get over the hump and beat the Buckeyes for only the third time since 2001. They've only won twice since then. It's been pretty bad for the Wolverines in this rivalry. It hasn't been much of a rivalry lately, but hopefully they can finally take down their arch nemesis.
Yeah, and Harbaugh is kind of like, he's like 0-5 against them, isn't he?
Yeah, yep, he's winless in five games against Ohio State, but hopefully he seems to have his fire back, according to his players. Even though Harbaugh comes across as somewhat monotone in his press conferences, his players seem to think that he's got his energy back, and hopefully that will lead to a Wolverines victory finally over Ohio State for the first time since 2011.
Yeah, I'm kind of pulling for him this year. I want to say, and I've mentioned this before, I kind of like Ann Arbor better when Michigan wins the Ohio State game. Everybody's just a little more friendly. They're not the grumpy, oh gosh, another bad season. They could be, you know, won everyone, but if they lost to Ohio State, they're still grumpy. So I'm looking forward to a Michigan victory today and a Purdue victory, by the way, too. Let's see. I'm going to mention this. This is our last one-hour show. Now, before you get, if you didn't hear our here last week, if you were not listening last week, and what's wrong with you if you weren't listening last week? But Theron called in and he spilled the beans that starting next week, December 4th, we will be a two-hour show again from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock. So Martha put the coffee pot on. We're going to talk guns for two full hours starting next week again. So that'll be a lot of fun. And we'll have some fun, too, because that gives me some more time. I always seem lately to run, you know, this past year now, I've run out of time at the end of the show. I'm hurrying to try to get everything in. We can just have some fun and relax and expand on topics and things like that. Let's see. Michigan Gun Shows, Michigan Antique Arms Collector today at the Suburban Collection in Novi. So that's a good thing to go to. And the also, that's there's two. It's at the same place, the Suburban Collection, but there's two different gun shows there. There's the Michigan Antique Arms Collector Show and the Novi Gun and Knife Show. Now, I don't know if that's a reason to, if you can get in for one low, low price, or maybe that's a way to get two entry fees for you. I don't know, but it doesn't matter. It's a big place, and they have lots of things there. Let's see, Ohio, we got the Shelby County Gun and Knife Show in Sydney, Ohio, the Canton Gun Show in Canton, Ohio, Columbus, the Westland Mall Gun Show. Can you imagine they have a gun show at a mall? Holy cow, they'd never do that here in Ann Arbor at Briarwood. Let's see, in Missouri, with the Springdale Gun and Knife Show in Springdale, Arkansas, again, on the border there, and the Midwest Arms St. Charles Gun Show in St. Charles, Missouri, the RK Gun Show in Kansas City, and the RK Lebanon Gun Show in Lebanon, Kentucky. And I was going to say, there are none in Ohio or in New York until December 4th, but for Mike on Long Island, who has informed us that he is not, he's moving to Phoenix, and I'll have to put him in touch with my friend Paul Berardi out there, who's another Ford retiree that's a good Good guy, and he can show him around the gun community of Phoenix and a lot of people he knows out there. So let's see. We're still sitting at CPL numbers of 764,806, and that hopefully will be new by next week. And I will put out the challenge that I did last week and the week before, just because we did get a couple of good ones the first week. And for the, I know everybody can't be listening every week, so hopefully you can pick up the podcast in between. I always put them up, and I put up things like fun memes and sometimes stories and stuff like that. But what gun were you most excited to try or buy that turned out to be a big disappointment? And so I thought, I had a couple of good comments about Savages with light primer strikes, and we had one gentleman that had bought a new AR-10, and he was having chamber issues with it, but it might have been reloaded ammo that wasn't full-sized or something. So anxious to hear from him on how his how if he's now liking his gun after he cleaned the chamber and cleaned the bolt head and all that kind of stuff, because he was getting some rounds stuck. And it could have been that if they weren't full-sized, I said, try some good ammo. So, but I mentioned a couple, Ruger SR-22P, a Savage 93-17, LCP-1, Glock 17, Ruger LC-9. None of those that they're particularly bad guns. It's just I was so fired up about them, but then I was like, meh. And then, so I moved on, okay? I had something fun. I love this time of year when you order things and they show up in the mailbox or on the front porch. And I had gotten a gun a couple of months ago from a friend. This is from John in Danville. And it was an old Mossberg. Actually, it wasn't a Mossberg. It was a Ward's Western Field model 04M489B. Well, that's not a familiar number for a lot of people, but you can go and you can look up for cross-references. And there's a number of places you can do that, things like Numerich Gun Parts. There are, gosh, so many neat forums around. There's Rimfire Central, because this was a 22 semi-automatic. And it was it's missing a few parts. And it's the kind of parts that people, you know, like if you're missing a butt plate, somebody can go, well, I can come up with a butt plate. I can shoot it without a butt plate. Come on. Okay. But let's say you're missing something like a trigger guard. And this is one of these Mossbergs that has this plastic trigger guard that's got finger grooves on it. You know what I'm talking about. It actually goes from in front of the trigger guard. It expands around the trigger. And then it follows down the grip, and it's got finger grooves in it. Really neat looking thing. I mean, very custom looking, okay? And so it was missing that. So here's a, and also it's missing its front sight, which I've got a plan for fixing that one. But because I have another Mossberg that has the same kind of sight. It's one that has a, it's got like four or five different posts up in the front, and they fold down so that you can have one that's got a thin post, or one with a fat post, or one with a dot, or one with a circle. I mean, just kind of neat. It's target-like sights, okay? And it's got a normal front sight or rear sight that just is like a spring-loaded ramp. And so it's missing the front sight, and it's missing the trigger guard. Well, those are kind of the things. And he said it doesn't shoot very well either. I mean, it's like jams and stuff like that. Well, I did fire it, and it fires very well. It needs cleaning, but it did fire, so that gave me hope. I always try to fire something first. Well, I check it to make sure that there's nothing's cracked, rusted, things like that. But then I do fire it, and it was functioning fine for all except the last round. It didn't extract right. I think that was just dirt. So I'm going to take it all apart and lube it up and stuff. But first, I thought I need to see if I can find the So the parts that I'm missing. Well, the front sight, I've got another Mossberg that's got the same front sight. So I can take that one apart, maybe borrow a couple of the different posts and put them on the other one, and then I'll have a functional front sight. But I was thinking maybe I can even make those pieces, unless I can find somebody that sells those pieces. Well, I did find not the front sight, because there's these guns. Now, by the way, this Ward's Western Field, just like Glenfield's, just like, Western Auto, Quality Farm and Fleet, different guns. Used to be back in the 50s, 40s and 50s, you could walk into almost any Ace Hardware might have its own guns. And matter of fact, when you look at one of these cross-reference charts, you see how many different ones. You go, I never knew that there was a company called blah, blah, blah. Well, it wasn't. They made a lot of guns that were mostly made by Savage / Stevens Company, and by Mossberg. However, the thing is that they always would put them under names. Just like Sears didn't make their own guns. Ted Williams guns weren't made by Ted Williams, or J.C. Higgins guns. They were sold under the Sears brand, okay? And they were made by many companies, and mostly Savage and Mossberg. But there are some that were made by Winchester and High Standard and Remington and things like that. So if you know what you're looking for, you can often find a nice 22 or 12 gauge or something like that that is actually the same or virtually the same as a big name brand, but it's got some, I like, collector's value because it's got their J.C. Higgins brand. And J.C. Higgins was actually J. Higgins, who was an accountant or something, and the people at Sears go, J. Higgins, that's a pretty neat name for a brand. It'd be even better as J. C. Higgins. So they put a C in there and came up with J. C. Higgins brand, and they made bicycles and ball gloves, just like Ted Williams was a famous pilot and baseball player. I say pilot first because I like pilots, but baseball player. And then he went on to be in the Army or the Air, well, Army Air Corps / Air Force eventually, and became a pilot. And so he lent his name to things. We used to laugh about Ted Williams endorsed candy. Okay. Well, that's not true. They didn't really make that. But so they have these guns that you can find. And I found the cross-reference and found out that a Ward's Western Field 04M-489B was in reality a Mossberg Model 50, which is kind of neat. And they're actually not a whole lot of them that you find parts for and stuff, because most of them they made as a Model 51, and the 51 had a magazine in the bottom, like a small steel magazine that would come up, and it had like three fingers on it. It would hold, believe it or not, a semi-automatic that would fire shorts, longs, or long rifles, any of the three, okay? And normally the problem with that is the magazine and how it would feed. But they came up with a way to do it. That was the Model 51. But the Model 50 was even neater, because, and I like these ones. It fires and has a magazine, a tubular magazine, but not under the barrel. It's in the buttstock. Yes, I said buttstock. Beavis and Butthead would go, he said butt. But the buttstock, okay, which meant that on the back of the stock, it actually has a tube that you unscrew and you pull it out. And then in the side of the stock, there's like a port where you put the 22 bullets in, the shells, the casing, the cartridges, whatever you want to call them, but the 22s in. And so sure enough, they had one of these. They actually have a bunch of them. They show like six different trigger guards. There are small ones and big ones and long ones and funny-shaped ones and stuff like that, and they have them all listed. Now, they didn't say they had one for a Model 50, but I knew that the Model 50 has the same stock as a Model 51, so I could order that one. And I did, and it came in the mail yesterday, and I'm so excited, and it fits perfect. So now I can go ahead and finish the restoration and fix up of this rifle, because you can't really have one out there without a trigger guard on it. And I've heard of people, when you can't find a trigger guard for something, they make one out of aluminum or they make one out of plastic or something. I didn't want to go to that trouble, especially because this is a complicated design. But anyway, so I'm excited. Now, the company is called HavlinSales.com. And Havlin Sales is actually, I want to say they make a lot of parts for different Mossbergs and stuff, but in particular they make a lot of 22 parts for Mossbergs. So I want to say it's a neat company, and these are kind of some of the things you can find around on the internet. Thank God for the internet, because and for wasting time on the internet, because you know, how would you know? This is a little company in, where was it, Ohio or something? I'll have to look it up. But the point is that you wouldn't know that this company makes it, or maybe you might find it out from a magazine or something. In the back of it, it'll say Mossberg Parts, you know, Havlin Sales, and wherever it is. And then you would have to write them and find out, can I get a catalog? And then they write back, and they don't have a catalog, but they've got a part sheet, blah, blah, blah. That's the way we used to do things. Do you remember that? Nowadays, with the internet, you can look it all up, and you order it online, and boom, it shows up in the mail in a couple of days, and I'm so excited. So let's see. There's a funny meme that's the guy, what's his name, Kretkowski, something like that. He's the guy that John Kretkowski, he's the guy from The Office, and there's a meme of him, and he's holding a whiteboard, and it's written out, it says, the Rittenhouse trial is a good example of what you can go through even if a defensive shooting is legally justified. And then just below it, it says, that's why the only gunfight you truly win is one you avoid. Now, that is a very wise statement, because let's say that you are carrying a firearm and that you are, you know, concealed carry, or maybe in Michigan you can open carry, wherever, maybe you're in a state with constitutional carry, so you're carrying a firearm. And you're doing it to defend yourself or a loved one or somebody who needs defending, okay? Remember, you're not an officer. You're not a law enforcement officer. So you're not out there to be stopping somebody from doing something necessarily, unless you're trying to protect somebody and defend them against murder, against gross bodily harm, against sexual attack, things like that, okay? And so if you have to actually draw your firearm, you should be prepared to use it. But the point is if it causes the person to back up, to drop whatever their knife and run away or whatever, the good outcome is that it stopped the threat and it didn't have to fire. Okay? Now the left tends to make it sound all the time like, you know, we're bloodthirsty and you're carrying a gun because you want to go out and kill people. And the only reason to have an AR is to kill as many people as you can as quick as possible. Well, no, that's not true. And again, the best outcome is to not have to actually use that firearm. We got Ed from Ypsilanti on self-defense. Hi, Ed.
Hi, Dick. First, I'd like to congratulate you on your second hour. I'm glad to hear about that. And at the same time, I have mixed emotions because it's one less hour of prep time I have on Saturday mornings.
and one more hour's worth of phone calls that you can make to call in, right?
Well, that's right. You allow a second call in the second hour. I'll get even less done. So, you know, I had a guest on a couple weeks ago, and he wrote this book called Wrath. And we were talking about wrath, anger, and then rage. And we were talking about how, you know, anger is a good thing. Anger is a good motivator. And then, you know, wrath, that's usually calculated response. Rage, not so much. And we were talking about old Westerns, stuff like The Man from Laramie and Winchester 73. And, you know, you're talking about, you know, self-defense. And, you know, you just have to have some self-control. Don't let everything, you know, and a lot of our Western heroes at one time, they weren't knee-jerk. You know, it was the bad guys that were always shooting people indiscriminately
for a
flight, you know? Just let something go.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard that conversation. I heard that you were talking. The gentleman was your guest. I heard you were on the side of sometimes anger is good, and he was tended to be, you know, more self-control side, right?
Well, I think we both agreed that anger is a good motivator. As in he even said as much. The Bible says be angry and sin not. Control yourself.
Yep.
You can get angry because a lot of times if you don't get angry, you won't change the government.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You won't stand up at the school board and tell them off. That's righteous anger.
Boy,
wrath is when you react like, okay, we're gonna vote you out of office. That's the result of our anger.
Well,
it's not necessarily, you know, smiting and killing all the time.
I got to tell you, you're probably going to talk about this today. I saw more, and I won't because I'm trying to talk about guns. But but the thing is that there were a couple of school boards, one in Texas, I think, actually, that actually sent out their own, they have their own, like, police force, Rock River, Colorado, for their schools, and they sent out people to, they actually raided the homes of some of the people that were protesting at school boards.
Actually, I'm going to bring up the FBI doing that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know about local officials doing that. Boy, if you got a link, send it to me because that'd fit right in.
I don't want to take up your show.
I just want to. You were talking about self-defense and Westerns and our culture. And yeah, you're absolutely right. We need to not just think that we can react and blow somebody away and call it self-defense. I mean, look what Kyle went through to prove himself.
Yeah.
You know?
And by the way, the left doesn't care. And they're all disappointed that he didn't get convicted, despite the fact that the people that sat on the jury there and heard all the arguments and stuff like that found him not guilty and acquitted him of all charges. So
the left is getting away with taking away all our other rights, and that was one way. I mean, self-defense is predicated on the Second Amendment, and vice versa. The Second Amendment is predicated on the godly right to self-defense.
Yeah.
So if you take that away, Mary, you've just chipped away a major support for the Second Amendment.
Yep.
I'll talk to you later.
Thanks for the call, Ed. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
And actually, what's going to be fun is we enjoy it. I'm glad that Ed now knows that I'm having a second hour because then my show leads directly into his show. And that sets us up again with a long block of good shows on Saturday where we all have fun and call in and support each other and stuff like that. It's good. Here's an interesting take on things. This was a headline I saw today. Ford should be thankful they're not a gun maker. What? Why is that? Well, because, you know what, if they were a gun maker and if that guy in Waukesha, Wisconsin had used a gun, you know, well, actually, they made that car, and that car was used in an illegal manner, or that SUV. And by the way, they said, they're talking, one of the ads for the Escape, it says, make your escape with the Ford Escape. Oh, geez. Well, see, you're encouraging people to run over parade people and then escape in your escape. I want to say they should. It's the same discussion on if a gun is used in an improper manner. How can a manufacturer of a legal product be held liable for something if somebody uses it in an illegal manner, like when somebody shoots somebody or when with a drunk driver, with somebody running into a parade full of people and stuff like that, you cannot hold those people accountable for that because there's no way. And that's actually where the Protection of Lawful Firearms Commerce Act ends up protecting companies, and that's because the lawyers will go out and try to sue them out of existence. So, anyway, this is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1692.7 FM. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back, and let's see, we've got a call from Mark from Howell on 22 Rifles. What's up, Mark?
Hi, Dick. Glad to hear your show's going to 2 weeks. I heard they were on kind of spring it last week. Looking forward to that. I've got a Ward's Western Field here. It's a bolt-action 22 rifle.
Cool.
It accepts the 22S, L, and the LR.
Okay.
This is the number on it. I don't know if you can research this for me and find out what I've got here, but it says 14, M is in Mark, 491A. So I don't know what that represents. It's 14M491A.
I will add, there are so many different ones that, I have a 489B, that's a 491A, and that'll designate that, and by the way, the 14M probably designates that it's a bolt action as opposed to semi-automatic.
Yes.
And stuff, but I'll look that up because it is, is it in nice shape? Does it have all its parts?
Oh, it's beautiful. I bought it from my neighbor several years ago. He used to do garage sales, and he would have the minivan out there and say, "Hey, Mark, you know, open up the back door and say, look at all the firearms I got for sale." I bought several over the years from him. It's beautiful. It's got the, what do you call that tube that comes out with the spring? It goes all the way into the magazine. It's like a buffer tube or something?
Well, no, that's actually a mag. Is it a tube under the barrel?
Yes, it's got the, like, the flat, the thing you turn with the little knurls on it, and you pull it out. It's like a brass tube with a spring on the end.
Yeah, well, what that is, of course, that's called the inner magazine tube, okay? And it has it's got a spring-loaded plunger on it, and that's what provides the, the force for the rounds. In this case, you put them in pointed forward, you know, in that little slot underneath, and then you slide it back down, and it provides a tension for it to pop into place. And then when you move the bolt action, there's a lifter that lifts that round up and holds it up so that when you put the bolt forward, it pushes it into the chamber. So it's called an inner magazine tube.
Very neat.
And you can still get those.
I've never actually fired the rifle, but it's gorgeous. I mean, it's beautiful shape, and it's got the beautiful wood on it, and it's got very unique sights. In the front, you got like an iron sight, and you flip up the little ring, and it's got a little pin that goes in the middle of the ring. You can flip them up individually.
Yep.
And then on the back, it's got this like double knobs and a very unique sight. It's like I'm looking at it right now, and it's got the two knobs on the left and one on the top, and it's like you can adjust it. It looks like for windage and up and down and left,
does
right,
it have,
and all that good stuff.
And is the rear sight a peep sight? It's like a big, round, knurled piece with a little tiny hole in the center.
Yeah, it's got a bar, and it goes to the right with a little hole in the center. And then even above the in front of the bolt, there's another sight you can adjust for height and windage. It's got a couple knobs on it. You got the one on the front of the barrel, the one on front of the bolt, and then you got the one on the tail end here behind the bolt handle.
Yep. Well, what happens is the one up in front is more of the one that is used for, I want to say, more action type of, like, let's say you're out hunting rabbits or something like that with it, or squirrels, and you just need, to hit a 2-inch area or something like that, and because it's open on the top, you can see things more around you. You get a fuller view of the sight picture, okay? But the one in the back is a target sight, a target peep sight. And actually, they make those for all of, they still make them. They're replicas, but they were called a Lyman sight, L-Y-M-A-N. And they had a peep, so that what you're looking through is this, it's like a big disc. It's about an inch in diameter, and it's got a little tiny hole in the center, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what you do is when you look through that, the bigger disc blacks out everything else around, and you can focus with one of those fine points or even the ones with the little circle or dot on the end of it, and it's a target sight to be much, much more accurate. And your eye will naturally center the front sight in that opening. And I mean, it's a really neat design, and that's one of the things the old Mossbergs have, and people really, they collect them. This Havlin Sales company that I, or HavlinSales.com, and I know you do the internet, Mark. Take a look and see. You'll see that site and everything in there, okay?
Oh, great, yes. And I did that. I sighted it with, like you're describing, and boy, that when you use the combination of that front on the muzzle and the one in the back, boy, it's like, wow, it's really neat. It zeroes right in. Your eye focuses right in that little circle and that little pin.
Well, do you know what? It also helps. Think about this, folks. As you get older, your eye has a harder time focusing on things that are far away. That is because of the your eye or your actual lens is not as flexible and it doesn't focus as well anymore. And so that's why you have to wear reading glasses and stuff too, okay? Well, when you use one of these peep sights, it is actually such a small hole that it like stops down, it closes down your iris, and it helps sharpen the image, just like on an old camera with a f-stops that you would adjust with an adjustable aperture. When you focus it down or make it go down to a smaller hole, then the depth of field gets greater and more things are in focus. So that's why these old peep sights, like Mark is describing, were excellent for target shooting. And when you weren't worrying about like a rabbit moving or something like that, when it's paper at 50 feet or 100 or 50 yards or whatever, you could get a much finer sight because of the small peephole, just like a stop-down aperture on a camera lens.
Yes, sir. And it's once again, it's the 491A, 14M 491A bolt action.
I wrote it down, Mark.
Take some photos and I'll email them to you so you can get a closer look up at it. Maybe that'll help you research it for me. Also, okay. It's got a U.S. patent designation number of 110729. So that just, I don't know what that represents, how many were made or, you know.
I'll probably be able to figure out. Typically, you look at these various guns and they'll give you a range of the years they were made, maybe 1946 to 1953 or something like that. So we'll be able to pinpoint a little bit on the time, too. Okay.
Okay, well, I'll email this, and I'll do a photo of that information on the gun itself, and then that way, if you have time, maybe you can research it for me.
I'll do that, Mark. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I love your show, and I can't wait till it goes back to 2 hours. Great.
Well, thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. So that's Mark's a longtime listener, and Mark has been a friend of the station. He calls in sometimes to Theron's show, and actually Mark had Theron and I up as his guest at one of the NRA dinners up in the Howell area up there. I actually call him Mark from Howell. So, okay, so let's see. I had a call this week from a friend, and he said, Dick, did you see that they had a guy on NPR, and they were talking, this is my friend and listener Chuck, and he was talking about NPR had a guy on, they call it the gun industry, or the gun control industry's new golden boy, and his name is Ryan Busey, R-Y-A-N-B-U-S-S-E. And he worked for 20-plus years at Kimber. And then when he retired from Kimber, he decided to become an anti-gun guy. And he is now, and he wrote a book, okay? And there's a show called on NPR called Fresh Air. And so they had Busey on to talk about his new book and all the things related to common sense gun reform. And now he's a big shot with Giffords, okay, which is, Gabby Gifford and her husband Mark Kelly, who is a Arizona Democratic senator and or representative. And by the way, he's a retired astronaut, if you didn't know that. Mark Kelly is a retired astronaut. But he went to work for, when he got out of college, he went to work for Kimber. And then he claims that after Columbine, he stumble upon this idea that fear and conspiracy and hatred were the things that drive political races. So, and then he also stumbled upon that thought in using fear and hatred and stuff in advertising campaigns. And that's how the gun industry is so bad. And they get people to buy guns for defense and things like that. Well, you know what? They didn't tell you, even though he claims that after Columbine, he decided that the NRA was bad and that the whole gun culture was bad. You know, he worked for 20 years for Kimber after Columbine, okay? They don't talk about that. He thought it was bad, I guess, but not bad enough that he didn't make a lot of money and sell a lot of guns for 20 years before he retired. But then they had him on NPR, and he was on there trying to smear the whole Kyle Rittenhouse thing and stuff. You know, when these, I want to say, NPR was supposed to be national public radio, not public relations radio. Okay, think about that. Okay, and you and I are paying for that with our tax money. That the PR in NPR should stand for public radio, not public relations radio for the left. Okay, very interesting. Let's see, 5 reasons for gun owners to be thankful this Thanksgiving. Well, just if you got guns, that's a good enough reason. But we should be thankful about a number of things. The fact that the Supreme Court seems to be, and they've got some pending challenges and stuff with New York's concealed carry laws and stuff, that fortunately, and by the way, Kavanaugh, it's interesting, Kavanaugh was talking about how, wait a minute, that's not how we do our constitutional rights, that we have constitutional rights for everybody, except unless it's a gun owner, and then it's got things like a may issue. Well, we might issue you this, you know, if you contribute to the political party, you know, like that woman out in Los Angeles that does that, the sheriff out there. Yeah, you can get your CPL if you contribute 80 new or 700 new iPads to the school system and stuff. Yeah, no, that's not how we do constitutional rights. We don't allow you to have freedom of speech only if we feel like it. No, it's a constitutional right. And Kavanaugh was talking about that this week. It kind of tends to, it's interesting to see what's going to happen with the ones like Kagan, who actually does shoot and was a good friend of Antonin Scalia's and would go hunting with him and stuff like that, and would target shoot with him and would shoot trap with him and stuff like that. If she will side on that, if you actually break it down and look at it, it's a constitutional right, and it is not something that is, well, maybe we'll allow you to have a freedom of speech and maybe we won't, okay? Let's see. So the first thing to be thankful for is a Supreme Court that seems to be supportive finally. The second thing is constitutional carry. Just this year alone, 5 states have adopted constitutional or permitless carry. That's 10% of the country added permitless carry this year alone. Okay, so that's a good thing. The growing unpopularity of gun control. Do you know that the gun control lobby was really hoping that, you know, oh, gosh, we're going to get Joe Biden in, and, man, I'm going to get my assault weapons ban and all that stuff? Nothing. He's not getting anything, okay? And, by the way, with the exception of Beto O'Rourke, I think it's Beto O'Rourke, with the exception of him, they're all kind of being quiet about the gun control thing because everybody's pretty unhappy with them with passing the, quote, infrastructure bill and all the new taxes. And by the way, I just was reading this morning that Biden's going to add 83,000 new IRS tax auditors. And boy, something like 70% of those are going to be aimed at the middle class. Yeah, no, they're not going to raise your taxes. They're just going to make sure that everybody pays their fair share, right? Yeah, not just the rich, okay? The explosive growth of gun ownership is another thing to be pretty happy about. That we are every year 20 million new guns, new buyers. Oh, man, we have so many new gun owners. And every one of those, by the way, I can tell you this, there's not a single brand new gun owner out there who would vote against guns. No. So 20 million here, 20 million there, their family, all this kind of stuff. Yeah, the explosive growth of gun ownership. Let's see, we've got Tom from Detroit on the Georgia shooting case. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Dick. I wasn't following that too close. When I heard about, you know, their citizen's arrest statute in Georgia, and I believe it's the same in Michigan, the person making the arrest, for one thing, it has to be a felony, and they have to personally witness it. When I heard that, I figured they were toast. But the thing I'm wondering about is how they got all three of them for murder when only one guy fired the shotgun or rifle or whatever it was. One guy pulled the trigger. And
I'm not sure about that, except that the three of them actually, and I got to say, I followed it, but not so in the detail. But it's just like if somebody is killed in a robbery or something like that, and somebody is driving the getaway car or was just there, they all get charged with murder. I know that there's things about aiding and assisting and stuff like that. So that's probably, I think that there was differences in the level or the degree for the ones who didn't pull the trigger, but they all had involuntary restraint of the person because they boxed him in with their pickup trucks and things like that. So I think it was a contributory thing.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that from what I could see on TV. But you know, I just don't know how maybe they got a false imprisonment or something like that. But how that turns into murder, it just doesn't make sense.
The same thing with, again, somebody sitting outside of a bank in a car waiting to drive as the getaway driver, and somebody goes in and shoots up a bank, they all get charged with it. So,
yeah, I mean, they get charged, but suppose you didn't know the guy, you know, you're driving the getaway car, you didn't know he had a firearm. You know, they would still probably try to get you for murder because, you know, yeah, they always overcharge. I don't know. I'm just saying, that's about the citizen's arrest. Look to me like they were out looking for trouble, and that's, you know. It's like the guy in the Rittenhouse thing. The guy, they said he was trying to, he thought that Rittenhouse was a shooter, you know, but I mean, he wasn't a policeman. He didn't have a uniform on. He didn't have any authority to question. You know, if Rittenhouse would have saw somebody with a uniform on, you know, he wouldn't have reacted like that.
Well, I want to say, Tom, the whole thing that everybody has to remember, you are allowed to defend yourself or somebody else, you know, a family member, loved one, even a stranger, for acts of that could include murder, gross bodily injury, and sexual attack. Okay, remember that it's the defense of that, and the thing is that again, you're not a law enforcement officer, and so the whole citizen's arrest thing. I've always heard of that, you know, for years, but I'm not related to the law industry or law enforcement or whatever, but it sounds iffy to me when there's the citizen's arrest thing. Although if somebody is attacking you and you stop them and you're sitting there holding them with the firearm while you're waiting for law enforcement to come, that is probably borderline on the citizen's arrest kind of thing. But I'm not going to comment any further on that, Tom, because I don't know.
Yeah, but I remember, you know, I read the statute, but it must have been, you know, over 20 years ago. And so I don't know if they changed it. But, you know, to me, it was, you know, there was a pretty fine line there. You know, somebody wants to make a citizen's arrest.
I agree.
And, you know, as far as and as I recall, you know, you weren't allowed to use deadly force, I don't actually think you're allowed to use any force.
No, I don't think either. And so I do think that is very iffy. I'm very much in support of concealed carry, of the ability to do your own self-defense and stuff like that. But when it comes to something like you think that you're seeing somebody jogging through the neighborhood and he might have burglarized something, that's what the cell phone is to call the law enforcement. If he was shooting at you, yes, you're within your rights. If he's trying to run you over with a car, you're within your rights. But if he's running through a neighborhood and you think, oh, he might be, by the way, you know, why would you think that he shouldn't be in the neighborhood? Well, in this case, it did have some racial implications. And so I don't think that there's, I think that the jury reached the right, last week, two juries reached the right decisions. The correct one in the Rittenhouse and correct one in the Ahmaud Arbery case. So that's what I got.
Well, thanks for taking my call, Dick.
Okay, Tom, talk to you later. Talk to you next week, probably. Remember, we got 2 hours next week. Let's see. There's an interesting trend in some of the guns that I'm looking at. And this is, I want to say, there's a new gun out called a CMMG 4.6 AR pistol. Now, it's typical. There's a lot of AR pistols out there and stuff. But it is chambered in a new round. And it's a round that actually was developed by, who was it? H&K for what they had as a personal defense weapon, their MP7. And it's a tiny little round, 4.6 millimeters, okay, by 30. So if you look at the cartridge, it actually looks almost like a 5.7 by 28, which is a cool round. You know, a 5.7 is about 22, 23 caliber, just like a 5.56. A 4.6 is only 18 caliber. And there are some small little, you know, there's a Ruger 204. There is a 17 HMR, things like that. The 17 HMRs are rimfires, okay? This is a center fire 4.6, an 18 caliber, 30 millimeter brass. So it's about like I said, the 5.7 by 2.8. And it's supposed to be super fast and pointy, and it will go through armor, and it'll has good penetration, but it doesn't have much energy. And I'm thinking, are we racing down to the pretty soon now? Are we going to have a 10, you know, a 2 millimeter? Are we going to have a 10 millimeter? Are we going to have, no, not 10 millimeter. A 4.6 is... So are we going to have a 2 millimeter or a 3 millimeter? You know, it made me laugh one time talking about a guy who necked down a 50 BMG cartridge so that he could seat a phonograph needle in it. Okay. I mean, that's a joke, but the point is that sometimes we go too far. What are you going to have? I mean, it's even a BB is 17, 1.77 caliber or 17 caliber. So it's pretty amazing that that we're kind of doing a race to the bottom with the small. Does anybody have one? Has anybody seen one? One of this new 4.6 by 30 millimeter. And, you know, you can put like 30 rounds in a mag and it weighs nothing. And it's in an AR pistol platform, which a lot of people are very familiar with. I think it's an interesting trend to see these smaller and smaller rounds. I'm not sure I like it. We'll have to see. And I would like to know if anybody out there has I think the only people making it right now are Fiocchi. So maybe, you know, 40 rounds, a box of 40 rounds costs $39. It's pretty expensive. Why would you do that? I don't know. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk Radio here at WHAM 1600. We will see you next week for 2 hours. See you then.